welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing podcast. I am Kate Prusser, and I am joined tonight not by my usual co-host, senior editor at Lookout Landing, John Truppen, because John is moving and he doesn't have internet and he refuses to drive to my house and record it with me, so whatever. I am lucky enough, though, to be joined by someone who knows a bunch about the minor leagues. It's going to help us talk about the trade that went down today. And just some general Mariner stuff overall. And that is Jamie Vinnick. Jamie, how are you?
Doing well, Kate. How are you?
I am good. I am watching the Mariners game on another tab and delighted to see Felix is pitching pretty well, even though very vintage Mariner style, they're not giving him any run support. Which
classic.
Stings. Yeah, stings a little. All right. So, Jamie, tell the nice people a little bit about who you are and how you came to know so much about the Mariners minor leagues.
I'm a staff writer for Scout.com's baseball branch, Hardball Scoop. I've done a lot of work this summer for the Tacoma Rainiers, getting familiar with their players, doing a lot of interviews and some exclusive stories on them. I did a lot with the AAA All-Star Game. I've also done some stuff in the past with the Everett Aqua Sox. I've always been a big baseball fan. It's been kind of my passion, sports in general, and kind of decided to put a career into sports media. I'm a junior at Washington State, and this is kind of where I've ended up at the moment.
So you have gotten to see a lot of our favorite Canadian slugger firsthand, Tyler O'Neill. And I know that, and for me at least, this has been true. Like watching him on grainy videos and listening to Brandon Liebhaber, the announcer in Jackson, describe his exploits was one thing, but actually getting to see Tyler O'Neill in person is a whole different beast. What has really stood out to you about him?
Well, I think, I mean, when you look at him, the power is obviously going to be the number one thing. He's got 19 home runs, a lot thanks to this recent incredible hot stretch he's on. But what people don't often realize is just how fast he is and how smart of a player he is. He's got a good glove, a very good glove, which he uses his speed to kind of enhance. He runs the bases well. He hits the ball well. You can look and say, okay, he's hitting 245. But you actually have to be there watching the games and realize how many times O'Neill has hit a ball hard and the shortstop makes a jumping catch. The left fielder makes a diving snag down the line. And he has gotten robbed of hits so many times this year. And, you know, and I'm not one to say batting average is necessarily a bad stat, but it's one that you have to, if you're going to use it, you got to watch the guy a little bit too. And I think you can't really tell the value of O'Neill without watching him. Yes, he does strike out a lot. That has been in this year. I think something that he's worked on, but he's got good power, which isn't uncommon for power hitters to have some higher strikeout numbers. He hits the ball very hard. He's got a really high line drive rate. And
yeah, these are not like cheapy PCL home runs. No. I think it's important to say. Like in the high gravity or the high home run parks like Albuquerque, he's hitting the ball literally out of the ballpark, like out of the complex of the ballpark.
Well, last night he hits one, I think it was 428 feet, and Ryan Altapia runs it down. I mean, and that all, what's that show up as? It shows up as an 0-for-1 and drops his batting average. And again, that's not fair to him, you know. He in the game, he had a walk-off home run against Las Vegas at the end of June. His previous at-bat, Gavin Cecchini absolutely robbed him of what would have been an easy base hit. It seems almost every time he looks like he's going to get one to drop, someone makes a great play. And as a result, it skews his batting average.
Yeah, he was getting BABIP to death over the first half of the season. He also was really struggling to adjust to AAA pitching, where there's a lot of MLB veterans, there's a lot of bendy stuff, and he really had an adjustment period. It seems like he's doing better with that now, and he's certainly on fire lately. I mean, how many home runs has he got? A billion, it feels like, in the last
19 home runs since June 23rd. He is 13 home runs, which leads all of professional baseball, tied for first with 30 RBI. That coming from our good Tacoma source, Brett Gleason.
Yes, Brett. Very, very, very good person over at Tacoma who's helped us out with a lot of access and getting access to the players, which has been really cool to, you know, actually get to talk to them and see the kind of preparation that they put in and, you know, get to know them a little. So I'm really, really holding out that they don't trade O'Neill just on a personal level, but also, you know, I think he's a pretty valuable commodity. And Jerry talked today about how they won't let any of their premium prospects go for anything other than starting pitching. So that reassured me. I don't know who made up the Lucas Duda for Tyler O'Neill.
I don't believe it. I've been a big Lucas Duda fan in the past, but the Mariners don't have a need for him. He doesn't do anything Danny Valencia doesn't do. And if, for some reason, they were to trade for him, they certainly wouldn't be giving up Tyler O'Neill. And I think the easiest thing to forget with O'Neill is he is only 22. He's not a 26-year-old guy just trying and trying and trying. He's 22 years old. He just turned 22. Still very young. Still a lot of upside. I would think with Jerry sitting, he doesn't want to he's putting a premium on not dealing those guys. I would think unless they are making a deal for like a absolute bona fide top 15, top 20 ace, I can't imagine O'Neill will be included. And that goes for also Kyle Lewis, Nick Neidert. I would throw Andrew Moore in there too.
There's no reason. I mean, there's no reason to trade Nick Neidert. Like, you can't. No. That's weakening the system down the line. And I mean, maybe if you're getting somebody who you think is going to help you win in 2017 and 2018. The problem is, like, we've seen what the cost is on those ace pitchers, and mm-hmm. it's not a cost that the Mariners can afford. Like,
no, you suck.
Even if we threw O'Neill and Lewis and Neidert all in a package, that's not gonna stack up to the top two prospects in baseball. You know, it's
no. I mean, you saw what it cost to get Chris Sale last year.
Yeah.
What it cost to get Jose Quintana this year, who's not even having that amazing of a year. It cost Eloy Jimenez, who's a top 10 prospect in baseball, plus three other pieces. The Mariners don't have the luxury of having one of those top 10 kind of sexy per se prospects.
Yeah.
They also can't afford to give up prospects like that when, yes, they're trying to compete now, but you have to remember that Robbie Cano and Nelson Cruz aren't going to be here forever. Well, Robbie Cano kind of will, but they aren't going to, and I mean, Nelson Cruz has got 1 year left. You have to make sure that you have guys that can step in and replace him. Dealing those for guys to make a run for 1 or 2 years, maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, it's definitely robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I think we've seen DePoto have a strong unwillingness to do that. Mm-hmm. So we were talking, and we'll get to this when we talk a little bit about the trade that was made today. But we're talking about the potential that they don't do much else because maybe there's nothing else to do or nothing that they feel like, you know, they don't want to go out and get somebody who they value or who they see as basically Giovanni Gallardo when we already have him in-house.
Exactly.
It's definitely a little easier to talk about these kinds of things, I think, and have that perspective on the team when they're doing well. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's not. Maybe it complicates things because all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, you know, they might actually put themselves in the thick of this division race or in the thick, not the division, the division.
No.
thick of this wild card race. Woo. And, you know, maybe we need to make some impact moves to get there.
I think the worry that comes with, and this is just from, you know, so much experience with this team, is how many times do they try to make a late push? I mean, we haven't made the playoffs in 16 years. I think any deal you make when you give up futures, and we've seen some of the deals that they've made in the past at the deadlines that just haven't really worked out.
Yeah.
Where they've given up some prospects to try and make a late push. I mean, and it's, they gave, it was, who was it a couple years ago? Kristen Norfia. And granted, they didn't give up a whole lot for him, but it was just those moves that Kristen Norfia was okay at best for 2 months and then was gone. And I think that's the type of moves that you're a little hesitant to make. And especially, you were talking about the starting pitching market. There isn't that kind of, you know, premium name, Sonny Gray, but it seems unlikely that the A's would deal Sonny Gray to a division rival. And if they did, it would probably cost the Mariners more than they're willing to give up.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. I mean, the Astros are apparently hot in pursuit of Sonny Gray, so we'll see how that develops.
I did see something earlier that their interest had kind of waned. It looks like the Yankees maybe, they have the prospects. There's no doubt about that, which, again, would be an unfortunate event for the Mariners just because they are in a wild card battle with the Yankees, but they're a team who could give up the prospects to get Sonny Gray and could use an upgrade in starting pitching.
Yeah. Well, the team is playing well right now. So we'll talk about a few takeaways from the series sweep against Chicago and the series win, or the series, yeah, series sweep against Chicago, series win against Astros. I think there's a lot of good to pull out of this, and then there's also a lot of things we maybe wanna kind of look out for. So let's start with the Chicago series. What kind of stood out to you about those games, which the Mariners never led first? They always had to come back from a deficit to battle back and win.
Well, that would have been too easy, right?
I mean, it worries me because you want to win against the White Sox. They're not a good team right now. They're in fire sale mode, right?
No, not at all.
So those are games you should win. They should have come out of there with a series sweep. And
they did. It just wasn't easy. I mean, it was come from behind, it seemed, every game. And I think the one thing that concerned me more than anything is they relied so much on the superstars to win that series. I mean, Cano, mm-hmm. Cruz, and Seager essentially won them that series. I mean, they had the big home runs at the clutch moments. And and Sunday's game especially, in a game where they were down 5-0. I mean, we'll focus on Andrew Moore, but, wasn't a good start for him. It was his first road start. Or should we be concerned and say, oh, he's a bust? No, it was a bad start. It happens to everyone. He didn't have good fastball command. He's going to be fine. It was against the White Sox team that kills the Mariners. They've always killed the Mariners. And he gave up three of the runs came off Avisel Garcia home runs,
yeah,
who's having a tremendous year.
Yeah, and one of the pitches was really good. It was low. I mean, that's just a hitter beating
good
you.
Piece of hitting.
One of the pitches was a bad mistake, very bad mistake, that I'm sure he regrets.
And he's a smart pitcher, and I'm sure the first thing he got back into the clubhouse, and he focused on that pitch. You know, what did I do wrong there? Where did I miss? Because, I mean, we've seen this, and this is the type of thing that you really have to not only watch him pitch, like in the minor leagues, but, you know, even talk to him and just see what the kind of guy he is. Baseball is what he's about. I mean, which it should be the case for most players, but he's so smart. He's a mature pitcher. He knows what his job is. I mean, he knows he's not going to go out there, throw 99 miles an hour, strike 14 guys out, and walk away. He knows that he's going to have to be very, very particular with his pitches, very smart. He's going to have to locate, or he's not going to be successful.
Yeah, student of the game, I feel like these things get thrown around or they get dismissed. Like, oh, okay, we all know he's smart. Well, you don't see, I think, right away how that translates for him as a pitcher with the learning curve. It's just been incredible to me as I've studied him and watched him, how much he adjusts from start to start and how much he adjusts even from batter to batter. You know, once he goes out against a guy and the guy gets the better of him, coming back and trying to do something different next time. And, you know, I mean, he's young. He's super young. And maybe maybe it's not ideal that you have him in the rotation right now as a contending team, but he's what they have.
That's the unfortunate truth at the time, because he's a better option at the moment than Gallardo. Now, that could change. He's better than Gavilio. He's better than the group of starters in AAA, DeYoung, Whalen, who's hurt right now, Casey Lawrence, Christian Bergman. And I think the thing with Moore is that people have to understand, he's not going to be Clayton Kershaw. He's not going to be this top five pitcher in baseball ace. What he's going to be, and what I think he very easily will be, is a good, solid number three starter who goes out almost every outing and gives you a chance to win, which the Mariners, you know, Paxton is what they have right now for a guy that every single start, you know, you're going to have a chance when he's on the mound.
Yeah.
As much as we love Felix, that hasn't always been the case this year. Miranda's been a solid back of the rotation option, but again, not always going to give you a chance to win. Gallardo, certainly not. Iwakuma is too hurt to really analyze in that sense.
I would disagree a little, I think, with Miranda, who has showed, I think, some pretty amazing consistency as he's developed as a pitcher. You know, I feel a lot like we're starting to see him grow up before our eyes.
That is fair.
But yeah, I mean, Moore is not, and I think most people have accepted that Moore is not like the big blow you away pitcher.
No.
His problem against Chicago was he was not able to. Oh, God dang it. Brett Gardner hit a solo home run.
course he did.
His problem is with Chicago was he really didn't have that ability to put batters away. And no. That's what he's going to have to work on. He has at other times. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a put-away pitch or he doesn't have the ability to put batters away. He has this circle change that he uses. He has a back foot. He's also started. He has that change that's good. He's started using a slider more or curveball. A little
bit more, yes. Yeah. And it's looking, it's a pitch that, no, it's not going to be a Randy Johnson slider, certainly, and it certainly won't be that right now, but something he could develop into a good, you know, just another pitch to have in his arsenal to keep hitters guessing.
So there is development. The thing is, there's no better option than to have him up here.
No, there's not.
And I think people are resentful maybe a little about that, like... resentful of the attention that he's gotten because he's not worth it or he's not, but it's because he's the best option in a pretty thin system. And so he attracts a lot of attention, but I don't think a lot of people are fooling themselves as to thinking like, you know, he's not going to go out there and have a shutout. He's going to give up some runs. Mm-hmm. The job of the offense is to step in and help him. I'll be really interested to see how he responds against the Yankees because I'm assuming that we'll see a much better start out of him. And, you know, as far as the fastball command thing goes, we see good pitchers lose their fastball command. Lance McCullers didn't have his fastball command.
Yeah. And Lance McCullers is one of the better pitchers in baseball right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, when you don't have that fastball command, it's the mother pitch. Like, you can't set up your other stuff. Especially if you're not a power pitcher.
No, exactly.
And you can't just rely on blowing things by. You know, James Paxton doesn't have his fastball command. Hey, okay, put it in the middle of the plate and just put it at 99 and locate it and hope that you can blow it past guys.
Yeah, it's what Edwin Diaz has had to do at times. You know, Edwin Diaz doesn't always have his command. Doesn't some a lot of time have his command, but when you throw that hard, you often can at
you
least
can
a
get past.
Little bit get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking about McCullers a little bit about the takeaways, big takeaways from the series win against the Astros. I wrote a while ago that there are three things the Mariners have to do over the second half of baseball. And that's the big three have to hit. The pitching staff has to be consistent on both ends. And they cannot run themselves into outs. So
that is for sure.
Yeah. So just like what kind of stands out to you? I was personally, I thought we would win the Paxton game. I thought we'd lose the McCullers game. I was nervous about Peacock just because he's throwing so hard all of a sudden.
Well,
he's become a strikeout god.
Brad Peacock was, you know, a seventh, eighth starter. And all of a sudden this year is looking like he's a bona fide number two, number three guy. I mean, he's had a great year. It wasn't a good matchup going in. And you know what? I thought Sam Gavilio, he pitched okay. I mean, it wasn't, you know, six innings, you give up eight hits, five runs. It's not a terrible outing. What the nice thing about it was he was able to go six and give your bullpen a bit of a night off because they had been just so, so torn apart by the White Sox series with all the close games.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a brilliant outing. The tough part in that one was, you know, Peacock pitched very well through seven innings, just not three hits, a run, struck out nine. The Mariners just didn't. They only had six hits in the entire game. None of them, no one had more than one hit. Kyle Seager had the only extra base hit. You know, your big three were combined. I think it was 2 for 11. So it's tough to win that way. And Peacock, and give credit to Peacock, he pitched well, but it didn't look like the best matchup. But then again, neither did, you know, Ariel Miranda and Lance McCullers, and they pulled that one out.
Time out. Felix just punched out Aaron Judge, and he let out this roar. Yes. That was masterful. He was struggling. He gave up the home run. You could just see he was laboring a little to get through that inning. He's like 95 pitches. We should talk about Felix a little bit, too.
Yes.
Because, you know, we saw him in Chicago. He wasn't sharp, exactly.
No.
But he was good enough.
And he hung in there. And I just remember that game that he pitched. It just, watching it, it was, you know, someone's going to look at this outing and say, oh, man, Felix pitched really well. I was like, he didn't pitch horrible. I would not say it was a horrible outing. But there was a lot of, it was a very okay outing. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad. He got through five innings. He only gave up one earned. He was in trouble a lot, it seemed like. And he just didn't seem to have a lot of command, though again, he got away with it, though. I don't know what on earth that throw to first base was he had, where he just, Danny Valencia apparently grew arms that are 11 feet long, because that was terrible.
Just mentally, I think what we're starting to see is Felix really having to battle in a way that, last year it was, well, I'm hurt, and he was out for a while, and now we're having to see him go out there and just grind when he doesn't have his good stuff, and grind when he's not getting the calls, and grind when he's not able to get the strikeouts, and he's having to like work low in the zone, try to get that ground ball. So it's a different Felix that I think we're seeing. And we've been talking about that for a long time, but it's a gritty Felix. It's not just that clear dominant one. It's a Felix who's going to like kind of take you out in the alley and fight you. Like,
exactly.
And that's exciting.
It is. I think he's had to realize himself too, that he isn't as dominant as he once was. You know, he's had to battle injuries. He's not old yet per se, but his age is starting to become a bit of a factor. He can't go out there effortlessly and throw 7 shutout innings. That just isn't who he is anymore. He's not the pitcher we saw in 2014 that rightfully deserved the Cy Young and didn't get it. He's no longer, I would not classify him anymore as the number one starter, period, and not on this team. James Paxton is the number one starter on this team. He is, what he's become is a average to good number three, which, you know, it's a little disappointing to see, because, you know, Felix has been this Mariner hero for so long on so many teams where they were horrible. Felix was always the bright side. But I think he's just having to adapt that he can't just dominate everyone. He has got to really focus on locating his pitches and on using his breaking ball well.
And I will admit, I didn't have a good sense as to whether he would be able to do that or not, because it's hard, and he's older.
It is hard.
It's hard to change your whole mentality and buckle down and realize that you have to just change your whole approach. It takes like we were talking about with Moore, like it takes a certain amount of baseball IQ and being a student of the game. And I guess because we've never seen Felix have to use that, I didn't know if he was going to have it or not. But outings like tonight make it easy to believe that he's going to build himself a new kingdom.
I mean, one mistake, and unfortunately, as we've seen so many times in his career here, one mistake might, at this point, could be the dagger, just because, you know, the Mariners can't score right now. And
score,
I'll give credit
to... Score him some runs, you pajama-clad nitwits. Score him some runs.
I will give Luis Severino credit. He's a very, very good pitcher. He's having a very good year, but they have 7 hits off him. They had the bases loaded at one point.
No, this is just not executing.
1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. This is the type of things that separate a team that can make the playoffs from a right around 500 team. And the Mariners are a team that needs to. They need to step up right now. This is where, you know, you're getting into the later innings, bottom of the sixth now. One of the big three that you need something from. Yes, Robbie Cano has 2 hits, finally breaking that 0 for what the field felt like 1,000.
He was 3-for-22.
Yeah, not good. All 3 of them have hits, but this is where you need one of them to come up with that big home run or that big double into the gap to kind of get things going. And then, you know, hope someone else can chip in. You know, Ben Gamble's got a hit tonight, but Gene Segura's still hitless, and he had a chance with the bases loaded and struck out.
Yeah. I mean, this is what you, like you said, this is where a team that has a chance at contending for the wild card separates itself from a team that's just going to kind of sit around 500. And so far, things are worrisome, especially when you get 6 strong innings out of your starter. You need to be able to score more than 1 run when the guy going up for you has only allowed 1 run to be scored. So that's concerning.
And when you're chasing a team that, I mean, you're playing a team that you're chasing.
Right,
I mean, you're a game
exactly.
and a half back of the Yankees. You, even if you don't sweep this year, you can take 3. You're all of a sudden either in a wild card spot or right there. I mean, you can't let those opportunities go by the wayside.
Right. And I'm just checking in now, and they have gotten 2 very quick outs, and Severino's sitting at 87, and then that scary bullpen comes in. So, like,
yeah.
it's just not, that's not great, guys. Not great.
Though, for what it's worth, that bullpen has been a little shaky. Betances and Chapman have not been as dominant as they have, but still. They're guys you just don't want to see.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the move that got made, speaking of bullpens, because the Mariners, you know, had a good little run there, and Jerry decided to make a move, and I will admit, I was super nervous when I saw, I did a lot of yelling on Twitter, when I saw that it was, that the trade was going down, then I saw it was for a reliever, and I was like, oh no, I don't know about that. Just when the bullpen is kind of starting to gel and pitch well. And then I saw four prospects headed over, and I had to lie down. And then Brian Hernandez's name was the first one. And I, that was a wild roller coaster of emotions.
It was,
this
especially because in classic Jerry fashion, in classic Mariners fashion, it breaks at 10:30. It starts to break at 10:30 on a Wednesday night. I mean, what was the Gene Segura trade? They made the Thanksgiving evening.
Yes, so I was making pies.
Trying to stay up and keep track, and I'm like, all right, this isn't happening. Then fell asleep. I wake up and I'm like, okay, I can live with that return. But I think the initial concern with every trade now, and if they make another one, it's going to be the same thing, is please tell me we didn't give up Tyler O'Neill or Kyle Lewis, etc. And I think that comes from the fact that we've seen Mariner trades in the past. They've given up prospects they shouldn't have given up. Adam Jones strikes me as a name. Granted, it was 10 years ago, but they make those kind of deals and then really, really regret them. So, but
well,
this trade...
this is a different, you know, it's so challenging because Mariners and the history and all that's attached. I mean, it's important to remember that there's been a complete turnover. I always think it's a little unfair to saddle this current regime with the mistakes of the past regime. So
and
we don't want to
do
that.
That is fair. But on the flip side, there have been a couple deals that Jerry's made that are a little questionable. The Joaquin Benoit one stands out.
Yeah.
At the time, the Wade Miley deal looked bad. Granted, Carson Smith hasn't pitched, and he turned Miley into Miranda, who's been effective. And then some of the other small deals, you know, like giving up Tim Lopes to get Pat Vendit, which wasn't a good move.
No.
Zach Lee for Chris Taylor. And granted, on the flip side of that, too, Chris Taylor wasn't doing anything here. Good for him that he's gotten it together in LA, but it wasn't like Chris Taylor was a hot young prospect. He'd had several chances and wasn't putting it together.
No. I mean, they've all been understandable moves, more or less, although I still think the Mike Montgomery Vogelback one.
Yes, that one was bad.
That was a bad trade. That continues to haunt us and harm us because.
Although we did turn Blackburn into Valencia, who has been a good first baseman this year.
Turn Blackburn into Valencia, which I like for sure. And that's the thing is there's usually at least an upside.
Yes.
But
although
I will say
Blackburn
that
shut down the Mariners this year and was a AAA All Star. But
I don't
want to
talk about that. That was more us playing poorly. I think Blackburn is not a dominant. Oh wow, they sent Felix back out there for a seventh.
Yep,
okay, sure, sure. Why not? So let's back to the trade.
Yes.
Back to the trade. So the news breaks. It's David Phelps for the Brian Hernandez, Brandon Miller, Pablo Lopez, Lucas Chiraldi. Let's talk a little bit about what the Mariners gave up. I mean, obviously, Brian Hernandez is the centerpiece. I liked him. I thought he was a good contact guy. I loved watching him run around, very athletic, very, very raw. But, you know, you can see the makings of a good player in that, I think. And I know he was like a personal favorite of a lot of people. And he was something pretty exciting way down the road. So it's another example, sort of like we saw with the Zach Littell for James Pazos deal, which Littell is a great pitcher. Pazos was MLB ready, though, so...
Yes.
But that idea of borrowing from the low minors or stealing from the low minors, you know, you saw the same thing in Gamble with Gio Orozco, and I can't remember who the other one was.
Juan DePaula.
Juan DePaula. A lot of taking from the future in order to get something for the now, which obviously is what you want to do if you're a contending team. But I do wonder sometimes if there's maybe, like you mentioned specifically that Lopes-Venditti trade, if there's maybe an undervaluing of the prospect at hand.
And that could be. I walked Hernandez a few times in Everett, and a couple times in Tacoma, actually. He's a good prospect. I mean, it's hard to sometimes really judge the MLB.com rankings just because there's a lot of things you can point out. Rob Whalen being ranked over Eric Foglia. Eric Foglia not being ranked at all.
Yeah, no, that's hot garbage right there.
Whalen and DeYoung over Braden Bishop. The fact, and Donnie Walton's a good example. He's a 17th prospect on MLB.com. I like Donnie Walton a lot. Great guy, versatile. But you could ask Donnie Walton himself, and he would not say he's a better prospect than Eric Foglia. But anyways, back to Hernandez. What I saw of him is he's got good contact. He's athletic. He's fast. He's one of those fun players. I mean, yes, he has some upside. Is he going to become an MLB outfielder? I would say there's a decent chance. But with every player, especially with him, there's negatives. A 6% walk rate, a 24% K rate. Not a good start there. Granted, I recognize he's 19. All of that starts to come around. 26 hits this year, 18 of them singles. He did have 4 triples. Everett Stadium is not the toughest place in the world to triple. They've got a kind of weird right center field that's almost like diagonal. So if you hit one out into the gap, it's pretty easy to triple. He's got a really strong arm. It's a little erratic. It can make the throws. It's just whether or not the throws are going to be on target. And we saw this a couple times in Everett, and I saw it in Tacoma too, where he made the strong throw. It just wasn't anywhere near where it needed to go. I know why people are upset we gave him up. He's a good kid. He's a nice guy. And as we said, fun player. I don't know if when you look at the Mariner system, I don't think he was going to ever jump Gamble, assuming he's around for a while. Haniger. He, at very best, he was Guillermo Heredia. And we love Guillermo Heredia.
Tongue twister.
We love him as a player. He's fun, but when it comes to where the rest of the prospects are developed, do we see Heredia over O'Neill, over Miller, over Bishop? That's where the question is. I don't think Hernandez was going to ever pass those prospects. At the end of the day, even if you didn't trade him now, at some point he was probably going to move. He just wasn't going to have a spot necessarily in the Seattle outfield. Now, on the contrary,
yeah, there's a real chain, right? Like, there's a chain going. It's not just that there's like this, there is that clump. It's overloaded at the top. Yeah. But even beyond that, you can just see from guy to guy to guy, like, the outfield is the one place where I can look forward and say, oh, we're stacked for years at this part of the
Bishop
system.
Bishop O'Neill. I didn't even mention Kyle Lewis. Liberato, who's starting to put things together. And then you've even got the fringe guys, you know. Kyle Waldrop, probably never going to be a consistent big league bat, but having a good year. Chuck Taylor had, what was it, a 20-something game hitting streak this year?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Eric Foglia, who's hitting over 300 in Modesto and was the Northwest League MVP. So there are so many outfielders that you could afford to give one up. And it's better that they gave up him rather than giving up someone. Or you never want to give up arms just because you're never sure with the arm. You didn't want to maybe give up Posey. You certainly didn't want to give up Neidert. And then at the same time, you got guys like Peterson and Vogelbach, where they're like your only first base prospects. Besides Evan White, I should mention, who's still a couple years away.
Yeah, I mean, the infield prospects are thin, the arms are thin, and this was what initially made me panic. Okay, so Hernandez, we're dealing for far down the road, okay. Probably that doesn't come back and bite us later. Even if it does, Phelps is somebody who can come and help us now, and we'll talk about him. Three arms I was surprised by.
Yes.
That they would want them, first of all, and that it took... And honestly, I think that the cost might be a little higher in the arms. I know that it was basically discussed as Hernandez and three throw-ins. Yes. But there are a few things that I wanted to kind of point out where this might actually sting a little more than people are thinking it will.
And I think Brandon Miller
is solid, right? Like, he's a solid, dependable, would be great depth D2 kid. He's not got the strikeout numbers. I think, what did you call him? A poor man's Andrew Moore?
Yes. If he hits his absolute ceiling, he's a lesser Andrew Moore. Which, again, Andrew Moore's a good pitcher, a very good pitcher. But Miller doesn't have that. He doesn't throw particularly hard. Tops at around 92. He's got a good breaking ball. He doesn't walk many. His issue is he gives up a lot of hits. He's almost averaging, a hit an inning almost. He doesn't have that dominant breaking pitch that Moore does. He's got a very good slider, but it's not Moore's changeup per se. He would have to really hit his ceiling to become half of what Andrew Moore is. Now, that could still amount to a solid fifth starter. More likely, it amounts to a fifth starter / long relief guy / triple-A bounce back. He wasn't going to become an everyday rotation. Now, I like Brandon Miller a lot. He would have been a guy I would have liked to keep and see if he could develop into that fourth or fifth starter role. But I think it's an okay move in that sense that he isn't this high-end, can't-miss prospect. He's a solid prospect.
He's a solid prospect. It doesn't hurt so much, although it will probably make the Clinton rotation pretty bad in the short run.
It could. That is for sure. Though they have already made adjustments. I think J.P. Sears went up there, though he's a reliever.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is we have plenty of relievers, but really pretty starved for starting pitching, to the point where you have people like Justin DeFreitas making starts in AA.
Pitched well tonight.
okay tonight. So Miller went, and then Pablo Lopez, who is somebody who I have been rooting for, he's inconsistent, right?
So very inconsistent.
He'll give up four runs, or he'll give up no runs.
Yeah,
give
there isn't one a run, real middle he'll ground. Give up
8 runs. Yeah, exactly. He is kind of all over the place. But during his last few starts, he was going 7 innings and giving up no runs, 1 run, 3 runs. He was really starting to stretch things out a little. On July 7th, he went 8 against San Jose, who, of course, are pretty bad, and just gave up 1 earned run. Really starting to throw strikes, and I think kind of putting things together a little bit. So he's Jerry called them a high-risk arm, which I guess makes sense. There's risk-reward, and then maybe he figures out his issues. Maybe he figures out how to be more consistent. Maybe he doesn't. So it's not like we gave them nothing, though.
No.
It isn't
a deal where we gave them here are 3 random guys you're going to cut by the end of the year. There are 3 prospect arms. Just adding on a little bit about Lopez, gives up a lot of hits. Now, one thing to note, he's in the California League, which is notably hitter friendly. But the thing of it, he just doesn't do anything great. He doesn't have a dominating fastball. He doesn't really have a dominating breaking ball. He's just kind of, again, okay. And is he going to amount to a big leaguer? Maybe. Is he really going to amount to a big leaguer? Probably not.
He's depth.
I would agree with that.
But he does maybe have a ceiling. The guy who I think has more of a ceiling is Lucas Schiraldi, who is a reliever who had a brutal 2016.
He just
sucked.
He was bad.
he would say that too, I think. And then rebounded in 2017. Our friend Bobby DeMuro over at Baseball Census did a profile on him. He's doing all of the members of the Modesto Nuts bullpen, which has just been aces this year.
Yes.
2017, he's 1-0 with 2 saves, a 4.22 ERA. In 32 innings pitched, he had 55 strikeouts. So he struck out the world. But he also had 23 walks. So just too many walks. But he
erratic
really
is a
has
good word to describe both of those guys.
Yeah. But I mean, 94 with his, and a he overhauled his breaking ball and is able to throw it as a strikeout pitch. I think Schiraldi might have, if they can continue developing him, I think Schiraldi has the quickest route to maybe contributing at the major league level out of all of them. He is a risk though. So
yes.
it was a bunch of risk that they gave up. So when people say it was Brian Hernandez and a bunch of nothing or a bunch of guys who suck,
that's
not exactly the case. It's a lot of high risk arms that are in most cases pretty far off.
It wasn't Brian Hernandez, Brandon Miller, and two horrible pitchers. It was Brian Hernandez, a good control command pitcher, and two very inconsistent arms. That is what the deal was. There is risk for the Mariners, but I think what Jerry decided, and decided probably well, is that their risk wasn't that these guys were going to become superstars. It was something that they needed to take to add to the bullpen, which is, yes, looked good lately, but always good to have a veteran depth arm in David Phelps.
So let's talk about David Phelps a little bit and what they get out of David Phelps. Because he, when I first looked him up, I was unimpressed, underwhelmed. Like, you know, he's got the ERA around, 3-something, FIP of 3.69. He's good.
Nothing special.
It's fine. But what really stands out is, although he has a pretty nice K9, although for a reliever you like to see maybe double digits. I'm greedy like that. But you do not like to see a 4.02 walk rate. That is not great.
No, walk a lot.
I was very concerned about this. I have since become less concerned by the more I read about him and kind of what he's done lately. What is your take on David Phelps?
David Phelps, he's interesting. If you look at the numbers, he had a horrible April and a horrible June. His May, he didn't allow a run. His July, he's been pretty much lights out. It's hard to exactly describe him. The way I would say David Phelps is he's just, like, fine. Like, he's decent. He's not Craig Kimbrell. I mean, I think there's not many like him. He's not going to be 2015 Fernando Rodney, where he's just a nightmare. He's just going to kind of be a reliable arm. Is he going to probably get beat a couple times? Yeah, he's not going to be perfect, but he's going to probably be able to come in. He's a veteran arm who's going to be able to come in and make some key appearances and shut down opposing hitters. And there was an interesting stat earlier that in 6 1/3 of his innings over 5 games, he had 14 earned runs allowed. In the other 4 games, or the other 4 runs, excuse me, have come in 39 games over 40 2/3 inning pitch. So it's looking at that, he's a guy who has had a couple of outings where he's gotten shelled, but besides that, it's been pretty consistent. I think the biggest concern, as we were saying, is the walks. I mean, he walks a lot of hitters, and
high in those bad months that he had. So his success is directly tied to his ability to not walk batters.
Mm-hmm.
I trust Mel Stottlemyre as a pitching coach. I think he's good at getting the best out of guys. I'm not sure with someone like Phelps, who has been around for a while, what that's gonna. I mean, he's only He's 30. So
he's 30. He's still, not 35, 36. So there's still room to improve and develop.
Still relatively young, although has been in baseball since 2008. So definitely. Yeah. Has
one other thing to note about him is he's added a little bit of velocity since becoming a reliever, because he did a lot of starting with the Yankees, and he started a little bit last year, but ever since he's been a reliever, he's been able to up his velocity a little bit, probably from not having to throw as many pitches.
That's true. He has added 3 ticks, I think.
I think, yes, 3 ticks is correct.
So he's up in the mid-90s now, which is good. I know that we, as Mariners fans, though, are, of course, really interested in the fact that he used to start.
Yes.
And was not horrible at it.
No. I mean, again, wasn't a stud. Wasn't awful. Just kind of...
Wasn't... his strikeout numbers obviously fall down to, like, 6s and 7s.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine, but actually, weirdly, the walk rate was lower when he was starting. He was walking less batters, you would not imagine that those things would go hand in hand. So maybe it's like a mentality thing. I know that he was told he would have the ability to start, and like, what reliever doesn't want a chance to be a starter again? I mean, some of them, I think, are really happy being in the bullpen, but you remember Carnes.
Carnes wasn't
really
happy.
Grumpy. Mike Montgomery wasn't happy about being a reliever.
No.
Some of those guys where they've conceived of themselves as that and they've started their careers as that, if you don't transition them early, they get grumpy about making that switch. So that's got to be something that's kind of appealing to him or motivating to him. And clearly it's something we could use. And, you know, if he's not any worse as a starter than he was as a reliever, then if we potentially picked up a starter, then I like this deal. This deal goes from being good to me to being great.
Yes.
So,
and I think that just knowing how Jerry's made his moves, he likes his versatility. I mean, that's the ability that he can start, and, you know, and it has proven he can start well, that if you need him to make a start because of all of the injuries this year, instead of having to call up someone for a spot start like Waylon, like Casey Lawrence, you can say, hey, Phelps, you've been started. You're making a spot start today. It's a lot easier than having to go to a guy who isn't probably a big league pitcher at this point.
Or isn't with the team.
Yes.
Too.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. I like the idea of having that versatility. I like the idea of him being a multi-inning reliever, especially if we see, I think Posey is a ways away yet.
Yeah.
And I really would prefer that he stay down with AAA and work on some mechanical stuff.
Yeah, he's not ready yet. He's got potential, but he's not ready yet.
Yeah. And Pagan can give you a couple of good innings, but really that position of long reliever, which you see if Moore is going to be capped at 5 or 6 innings in order to keep him effective,
yes,
then we need somebody who can provide that length at the end without the bullpen getting taxed. And the
right.
thing is, too much of the bullpen right now, too much of that weight is resting on Vincent and Diaz.
I mean, they've pitched 5 of the last 6 games, and the thing is, no, you don't want to even use them like that, but you have to, not only because they've been effective, Diaz choosing to be effective as of right now, next week it could be a different story, but because you need them, because you're playing so many close ball games, that you need your 8th inning guy, and Nick Vincent, as frustrating as he was last year, and it just seems that he just doesn't, at times where he just doesn't look good, has been an incredibly effective reliever, and if Diaz does what he's been doing these last 5-6 games, I mean, he's not touchable. It's eliminating those bad outings, and all of a sudden he becomes a shutdown closer.
Yeah. Nick Vincent fixing his home run problem has been really exciting
this
year. Yes,
very, very key, because that was a huge issue last year and what kind of brought him down over the stretch.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that was a problem with overuse, really. So
yeah, it was, because he was overused last year.
Yeah, so that's been great, and Diaz, actually, I think Diaz pitching more is better for him.
It keeps him in a rhythm.
Yeah, it just seems like he's able to come out and be more consistent when he's used more. So I know that there's a balance there, right? Because we saw, like Vincent, him get tired towards the end of last year.
Yeah, he burned out towards the end of last year. I don't think there's much of an argument. He started to get tired and unfortunately ended up costing the Mariners a little bit down the stretch.
But he's definitely, I think, kind of showing that if he sits for too long, then the results can be kind of disastrous. You know, that I feel like the times he's done the worst are when we put him in, quote unquote, just to get some work.
Yes.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
I hate that phrase. It doesn't. I don't know why. If you use your closer, I think, in a sense, when he needs to close, and I don't like the just get some work phase. I think there's always going to be a use for some guy rather than let's just get him some work.
It always feels, too, like that comes right when he's going to have to pitch the next day because they get themselves
exactly.
into that situation.
Now, there are times where getting guys' work is good. Like when they had Posey up here and they wanted to give him a couple innings when they were up big in games. That's fine if you're trying to get a guy's feet wet, give him a soft landing, but just to throw in Tony Zick or Nick Vincent because you feel like it one game to get them work, because then the next game or 2 games later, you're going to need them in a tough spot. And,
yeah.
Oh, well, they're lower on pitchers because they worked yesterday in an 11-run game.
I mean, speaking of tough spots, things have gotten kind of tough in this Mariners game right now, where Segura just booted a ball that was pretty easy.
Oh,
pretty easy inning-ending double play ball that it should have been, and poor Pazos got lifted, and now Zick is in with 2 on and just 1 out. So
Zick's been very good, but this is not who you want to see up Sanchez and then Judge.
Oh no. Oh yikes. So they're just going for a power on power.
I guess, and Judge is struck out looking twice. He is so due to hit one onto Royal Broom.
Oh, there's no such thing as due. But and he's been sort of off since the All-Star break,
He
right?
has been, which
Yeah.
Yankee fans are saying is due to the home run derby. Look at the Cody Bellinger, Charlie Blackman, Gary Sanchez numbers. It's just, believe it or not, Aaron Judge isn't superhuman. He's an incredible baseball player, but he isn't an absolute, he is mortal. He is going to have tough months. And no, he is not the best player in baseball. I will not admit that yet.
Just kind of Johnny come lately on that.
Yeah.
I have a hard time giving that to anyone who's not named Mike Trout, so.
No. And I'm not saying Judge is not an incredible player and not up in that top 10 category at this moment, but you got to remember, as amazing as he's been, it's been, what are we, 3, 4 months into the season. Mike Trout's been the best player in baseball the last 3, 4 years. I mean, it's hard to take it away from Trout, who's been hurt all year and still has, I think, 18 home runs. I mean, that just kind of says the player Mike Trout is.
Well, and you're really seeing teams be able to start adjusting to Judge as they see more of him too. He's not the new face
No.
in baseball anymore. So, as much as I feel like I'm always looking at his face. All right. So, I think what we'll do is we'll take a little break here, and then when we come back, we will answer some Twitter questions, and I will silently curse out this umpire in my head for missing a very close call on a ball that I thought was a strike. Okay, we will reconvene shortly.
Okay.
In all my memories of seeing brothers bleed and everybody grieves, but still nobody sees. Recollect your thoughts, don't get caught up in the mix, cause the media is full of dirty tricks. Only God can judge me.
Yeah, baby.
Only God can judge me.
Only God can judge me.
And we're back. All right, now's the time on the podcast where we answer your questions. So the first one comes from T. Miller, our own T. Miller, who made an amazing Defense Matters video for the site set to the tune of Family Matters. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's awesome. Have you seen it, Jamie?
I actually don't think I have. I'll have to check that out.
Oh, I'll send it to you. So
Good.
T at T Mill 24 wants to know who your two top untouchables are in the system and why. And I mean, obviously, no one is untouchable. Like, for the right price, if you wanted to offer me something really, really good, I would be like a starting pitching. I would
mean,
give
if
up
someone offered
so,
us.
so much for Jack Flaherty, like just anything or someone of that like ill.
Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah. Okay. So, with the idea that like really no one is untouchable, who are like the people you would least like to see traded?
Are we going specifically prospects or in the entire organization?
How about we do one prospect and one from the org, one from the system?
Okay.
From
the
org.
From the organization itself, there's a few guys. I mean, I would hate to ever see Kyle Seager go because he's such a fan favorite and he does his job so well. I would hate to see James Paxton go because he is going to be the ace, but right now I would honestly have to say you cannot consider dealing Jean Segura because how good he is, because how young he is, because for the first time since Ichiro you have a leadoff hitter, and for the first time since A-Rod you have a legitimately good shortstop. So I would say my one untouchable in the organization is Jean Segura. As for my untouchable prospect, it is Tyler O'Neill for many, many reasons, because he is very good and I don't want to see him ever moved. So I go Segura and O'Neill as of right now.
Okay, sounds good. I would maybe say I don't really have untouchables, but I have people who I think pop up a lot in trade rumors and I really wouldn't want to see moved. And I think probably I was very anti-trading Diaz over the offseason. I am still anti-trading Diaz. I think
I would
that
agree.
despite his struggles, he is going to be something special. I think he's young. He needs to develop. I don't want to give him up. There are probably other better choices for this, but I don't know. As far as like Paxton to me is totally untouchable. Paxton is as close to untouchable as you get. in the system.
Unless the Astros offer a prospect.
Of course.
Good.
Sure. but I think as far as like talking about people who we might move, it's him for me. And then maybe this is recency bias, but I would really hate to see Tyler O'Neill go anywhere, especially because I just don't think he's going to return anything close to the value that I think he has.
Well, no, because teams are going to say, oh, well, he's only hitting 240 this year.
Yeah.
You watched him play?
Exactly.
I mean, okay, maybe they have, but no, I can't see a scenario. I mean, unless he is included for, I'm like a absolute bona fide stud pitcher, I cannot see a scenario where moving Tyler O'Neill is a good decision.
No. All right. And I was encouraged by Jerry's discussion that we're, this comment that we're only going to move premium prospects for a premium return. So I'm just going to take it on faith that his idea of a premium return matches up with my idea of a premium return.
So not Tyler O'Neill for, you know, like Jason Vargas?
No. Okay. So the next one comes from friend of the site, Connor Donovan, or Kenner Doleman on Twitter. Does Phelps move into the rotation in 2018?
Possible. I don't think so. Just because I believe you're going to have... I'm not even going to say possible. I'm going to say, I would say highly, highly unlikely. You're going to have Felix next year. You're going to have Moore. You're going to have Paxton, Miranda, and I think they will have a fifth option. Is it a healthy Iwakuma? Maybe, probably, I don't know. It could be Gallardo. It could be Sam Gavilio.
No, I think Sam Gavilio is at his ceiling. I think he is what he is.
That could be fair. If I would think Jerry would go get an arm first in free agency before he moved Phelps to the rotation. Unless they are absolutely desperate and they just can't get anyone, I would say I would not see Phelps moving to the rotation next year. I could see him making a something like a spot start if he needed to, but I wouldn't say that Jerry's going to say after the season's over, David Phelps is going to be a starter next year.
I feel differently. I feel like free agency is tough. They're all older pitchers. I've looked at the list of who is available. I don't see anyone there that super fits
Bartolo
us
Colon?
Really well. you know how I felt about that. But
yes.
I don't see that out there. I don't know if we could get anything in trade. Obviously, it's not a good time, as Jerry says, to go to the pitcher store right now because it is. This is not the time you want to be looking. You look over the off season. Maybe someone comes available. Maybe there's some deal to be made. Maybe. If that doesn't happen, and there's a good chance that it doesn't, then I do think that he has a shot to move into the rotation because they saw him. He was what they liked best that was out there that they also felt like they could get. And by that time, he'll have some time in the system. He'll be accustomed to it a little. You know, there's a chance.
Fair point. I mean, and it could be. I just, again, my personal opinion is that he would look elsewhere first, but I mean, I'm not, you know, the expert. He absolutely could end up being in the rotation next year. I would think maybe Jerry would look elsewhere, but again, I have no inside sources. That's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah. All right. Next comes from Aaron Hill at Clouded in Texas. And Aaron says, seems like we have a plethora of relief pitching talent in AAA. Any possibility of flipping that for a starter? Relief pitching talent in AAA. AA, AAA.
Well, we don't have a plethora of relief pitching talent in AAA. We don't have that much relief pitching talent in AAA, period. I mean, it's mostly what AAA is right now as it pertains to reliever is a lot of veteran guys who aren't just good enough for the bigs. I mean, guys like Gene Machi, Mark Lowe, Dean Kiekhafer. You could maybe flip one of those for a similar starter.
No,
but nothing,
you cannot.
Nothing
there's not. Those guys don't have value. What you have in AAA that does have value, I think, is Altavilla, who is going to start recovering his numbers. He had that terrible home run flyball rate that was just partly
mechanical issues.
that was partly him getting into the zone too much and allowing hard contact, but a lot of just, like, bad luck, too, on that. All those balls flying out of the ballpark. He's going to get back on track. I really believe
him. I would agree. And he struggled this year, and I will be the first to say I have given Altuve a lot of unfriendly criticism, but I do believe that he's a talented arm. He's put up good numbers. He's just got to make sure he, again, doesn't leave pitches over the zone and get the home run rates down, and he'll be fine.
He was rushed, and he was successful initially, and I think people see this as a step back, but,
yeah.
I mean, for a guy who came out of a AA Division II school, never made it past AA before being promoted to the majors, got by a lot on the power stuff, then messed around with his slider grip, and I think is trying to make adjustments, and it's just, he's young, and it takes time.
He's
there's a lot of talent in that arm that just, I think, needs time to develop.
Little seasoning to help. He's only 24. He's not, again, 28, and I'm sure working with Lance Painter, who's a great pitching coach, has helped. Working with Stottlemyre will help. He'll be fine. He'll be back in the bigs next year,
But as far as, like, his trade value, it's pretty low right now. Yeah,
I mean, if you were desperate to move him, you could maybe get, like, a 7th, 8th starter, but at that point, it's not worth it.
No. You could get something out of Vieira, too, probably, if he can calm the walk rate down. Just pure velocity, exactly. But I've seen Vieira get hit hard in spring training, and it was real rough. And I mean, it hasn't exactly been smooth going up through AA. Like, it's going to help him. I think he's learned what he has to learn out of Ethan Katz, the pitching coach down there in AA, who's excellent. I'm really excited to see what he does with some time with Lance Painter, and excited to go there and talk to Lance Painter about Vieira, actually. Because that'll be a really cool conversation to have.
I mean, just talk to Andrew Moore. Andrew Moore speaks the world of Painter and how he's helped them. And I think for any young pitcher, Painter's a good guy to have kind of help you develop.
For sure. And then I guess Cody Martin is there, but he's also somebody who doesn't really have a lot of trade value, probably.
No, and I like Cody Martin, but...
Brave little toaster.
Yeah, brave little toaster. Yes. Sounds like a call was just blown in the Mariner game.
What? A call was blown? Oh, okay. Yeah. Yikes.
It sounds like Valencia slid in the second, and they it was ruled the transfer rule, but it wasn't really on the transfer, so now there's two outs in first and third for Dyson. Because, MLB umpires aren't good.
They are not. Okay. So on to the next question. Kenneth Gregory at Ken12 Gregory wants to know, our bullpen doesn't seem as bad as a couple of the NL contenders. Could Jerry be stacking up relief for a trade with the New York Mets or the Nats? The Mets aren't contenders, are they?
Mets? No, Mets are horrible. No,
Mets are out of it. I mistyped that question. But the Nats, and the Nats have fortified their bullpen, right, with the Oakland trade.
Yeah, and the Nats, think about who are you going to really get from them? I mean, there's no one that they're not going to give up any of their core, obviously. As for prospects, I don't think the Mariners have a reliever besides Diaz, who they're not trading, that would get them Rafael Batista. So I don't think the Nats are that much of an option, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those trades have gone down already as far as the Nats. I agree. And the Cubs have done a lot to shore up their rotation. They might be looking for some bullpen help, but I think that I don't know that I really see that happening. And especially if they want to keep this core together a little bit.
I mean, we could trade him Nick Vincent for Bryce Harper. I mean, I don't... They may have to add Rendon, but... And then,
for sure.
As for the Mets, they're way out of it. On the flip side of that, though, is when I heard there was a relief arm being mentioned, I thought Addison Reed immediately, because he's having a good year. But, so if anything, I think it'd be the reverse, where we'd look to them for a bullpen arm. Obviously not going to do that now with Phelps, but yeah, the Mets are 7 back, 13 and a half back of the Nationals, and probably even further back of the wild card.
Maybe you will not be shocked to know that Dellin Betances versus Jerod Dyson did not work out well.
No way.
All right, final question from Matthew Rotter at Matthew_Rotter wants to know. Sources say the Mariners are looking to trade their Capri Sun and fun-sized Snickers for a slice of cold pepperoni pizza. Thoughts?
We're getting absolutely hosed if we're giving up the no, that's a terrible deal for the Mariners. I'll give me the Capri Sun and the Snickers over the cold pizza. Warm pizza?
Warm pizza, yes. Warm
pizza, yes. But cold? No, if there's a microwave included to heat it up, then we're talking. But I don't think they can make that trade at this time.
No. It also depends, too. Like, right now, it's been very hot lately, and a Capri Sun sounds
nice.
Very refreshing. In fact, I think I want a Capri Sun right now. All right.
I haven't eaten dinner yet, so the pizza sounds good, but...
All right, well, I will let you go, then, so we can go go indulge our respective food cravings. Thank you very much to everybody... Thank you very much to everybody who sent in questions. Thank you, Jamie, for coming on and joining us and enlightening us on some of these trades.
Thank you for having me. Great
honor. Jamie, do you want to tell people where they can find you on Twitter? Where they can find your writing?
Yes, I tweet all of my articles. It's at JamieVinick9. That's JameyVinick9. And then the number 9. Everything that we post goes to Hardball Scoop. We're in the middle of switching a little bit of a format, so... Stick with us now for a little bit. It's going to a different bit of a template. But, I do, as I was saying earlier, a lot of exclusives. I hopefully will have something involving Thiago Vieira coming up this weekend, and then a lot of stuff for the trade deadline. So looking forward to the next couple weeks. But, it's going to be fun. Always fun to follow the Mariners, even when they haven't scored 3 innings.
All right. Well, thank you very much for sticking with us, everybody, and we will talk to you next week.
I think progresses. I call and you come through. Blow all my friendships to sit in hell with you. But we're the greatest. They'll hang us in the Louvre. Down the back, but who cares? Still the Louvre. Okay, I know that you are not my type. Still, I thought I'm just a sucker. Let you fill her mind. But what about love? Nothing wrong with it. Supernatural. Just moving close to me, close to you. Feel it coasting. Boom, 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 and make them all dance to it.